everyone, before we jump in, I just want to let you know about our end of financial year sale. For the transformation program alone, you can save $1,780 on the 6-month option and $980 on the 3-month option. Laura's Your Mindful Movement has been significantly reduced, and we've also made some improvements to it. The VIP option now gets a one-on-one coaching call every single week. You can save $150 every single month for the standard option, going from $449 down to $299 a month, which is ridiculous pricing. And the VIP has gone from $699 per month all the way down to just $499 per month. That is a saving of $200 per month. Nutrition Coaching with Tennille has also gone from $299 a month down to just $199 per month. So this is the most amount of savings ridiculous special that we have ever done in the history of the Fitness Genie. So if you don't want to miss out, just go through our website, www.thefitnessgenie.com.au, and submit an inquiry, or just DM me on Instagram or TikTok and let me know that you're keen, and I'll send you some more information. Thanks for listening, and let's get into your episode. Everybody, welcome back to Inside the Genie's Lamp. For this one, I think I need to actually turn down my microphone gain, but I'll worry about that another time. For this one, it's going to feel a little bit weird, I suppose, or maybe something that you've probably heard me say before. I'm thinking that I've said it recently, or I've gone through this in a podcast recently, but who knows? The topic, I mean, you've seen the title by now, but the topic I want to get to is that you don't love food. You love what it gives you. You love the byproduct that food gives you. So speaking to a lot of clients, a lot of followers, just a lot of people in general, really, one of the most common things that I hear is, I just love food. I just love food so much. I can't give it up. It's the reason that I can't stick to a deficit. It's the reason that I can't stick to my meal plan. It's the reason I can't lose weight. It's the reason that I can't do a lot of things, because I just love food so much. And it always comes back to that thing of, well, if you really loved food, then you'd respect it. And binging on food and then heavily restricting it, or maybe even not even heavily restricting it, but just binging on it, is not respecting food. It's not loving food. It's like having a partner or someone that you love or enjoy, and you're like, oh, I just love them so much. You still have to give them space. You still have to communicate with them and let them know where the boundaries are. And do you call them 118 times per day? No, because you'd probably be overbearing. You'd probably be too clingy. You'd probably be all these things. But you can't justify it by going, but I just love them so much. It's going to come off very stalkerish. It's going to come off, okay, you're obsessed. You need to go away right now because I fear for my safety. It's shit that obviously if you translated it to any other situation, it would not be justified. If you said, oh, I just love alcohol so much, I just can't give it up. Well, maybe that's a bad thing. Maybe you probably should give it up. Maybe you should restrict it just a little bit. Maybe you should learn to respect it. Maybe you should take a look at what you're actually getting from the alcohol, from the food, from the relationship, from all of these different things. Because I love food. Almost everyone I know loves food. It is a thing. Whoa. It is a thing that is inevitable for all of us. We are needing food. And if we don't have food, we're gonna die. That's just how it is. So it's not like alcohol or drugs or anything where we can just be like, hey, let's just give this up or just don't touch it and don't do this, because it's going to be in our lives. It's basically water. It's inevitable that we're going to have some sort of water, flavored or not, in our lives. We need the food. So if you really loved it, then you would learn to respect it. You would learn to work with it. You would understand the power that it holds, and you would learn to build it into your life. Because where most people, and you know, this could be different so for a lot of people, but where I've found commonly, probably about 70% of people, is they say, I love food so much, I just can't stop. It's like, well, it's not that. It's more than likely the dopamine that you're getting from food. It's more than likely the byproduct that you're getting from food. It's more than likely the escapism that you're getting from food. It is more than likely the emotional coping mechanism, the self-soothing. It is the something that you are getting from food that you enjoy more. It's like when people have that drink at the end of the night and they go, man, I'm just so stressed. It's the end of the day. I just need a drink to wind down and relax. But if they had any other means of relaxing, unwinding, doing whatever, if they could get a very similar effect of de-stressing from doing a puzzle, listening to music, or, you know, I'm just throwing random shit out there. It doesn't have to be that, but just something else. would they still say, I love alcohol so much, I just need it, or I just need that knockoff drink? No, because it is giving you something that you need. It is a byproduct. You're using the food or the alcohol or the whatever. It's just the easiest comparison that I have. You're using the food or the alcohol to get something, and it is that something that you want. So how can you get that something from somewhere else? Where the food usually comes in of people binging or saying that they love it too much, and yes, there's a whole bunch of like eating disorders and mental health issues and previous examples and learned responses and all those things that are going to come into play here. So take this with a fucking truckload of salt. But where most people find that they quote unquote suck at just sticking to the diet is when they're either out with friends or it's the weekend and there's no stimulus. There's either a hell of a lot of temptation or there's boredom. And there was, I'm going to paraphrase this like all hell, but there was a study ages ago, you probably know it, it's somewhat famous, where they gave rats, they laced the water in the cage with LSD, I believe it was, and they laced the water with LSD. And they kept going back to the water with the LSD. And they kept going back to it, they got addicted, they did all these things, and it was like, holy shit, yep, that's... they're addicted to LSD and they need that water. And when they put the other water in there, like just normal water, they preferred the one with LSD in it. So they had the choice of normal water or LSD-laced water, and the rats would always go to the LSD water. But then they did the exact same thing and they had the normal water and the LSD water, but then their environment changed. They put in fucking hamster wheels? Is that a thing? They put in hamster wheels. They put in like, I don't know, they put in their swings, put in jungle gyms. They put in different foods. They put in a way better, more stimulating environment for those rats. And none of them wanted the LSD water because they were focusing on, they were just having fun. They didn't need the LSD water. So when the environment changed, they didn't rely on basically the LSD. They didn't rely on that mechanism anymore to get them what they were looking for, because they created it in a different outcome through their environment by just having more fun. So if we are out at social events, for example, it's not the food that we are looking for. It is the social impact. It is having fun. It is disconnecting from the real world. It is de-stressing. It is doing things that are going to quote unquote fill your cup. It's things that are going to feel good for your soul. And if you have classically gotten that from food and having way too much to the point where you're going to explode, then yeah, it's going to be very hard to pull yourself away from those things. It's also going to be incredibly difficult for any other situation. You go to a social event and people are ordering drinks, they're ordering food. They go, let's just grab this for the table. You're like, oh, fuck, please, no, I don't want that. But you're still going to end up having it. And that's, you know, from time to time, that is fine. And I tell all of my clients, you don't need to completely avoid all of the things that you're doing. Get a hamster wheel. Yes, get the hamster wheel. That's what I'm saying here. You don't need to completely avoid all of those things. You don't need to completely cut out the garlic pizza, the HSPs, the any sort of food that is your vice that you absolutely love. You don't need to completely restrict it out. You just need to learn how to use it properly. The same as if you went to the gym. There's all of these things that can be amazing for building muscle, building body, building rigidity, building strength. But if you don't know how to use them, yeah, they're probably going to break your back. They're probably going to make you feel like shit. That's why you get a personal trainer, you look up YouTube videos, you do things to enhance your skill and ability at moving your body. But because it is such a taboo thing and it feels way too woo-woo, I'm going to say, but it's also really weird to go on YouTube and look up, how do I eat properly? It's hard to look at those things because on one end of the spectrum, you've got, nearly said a really, really bad word. You've got people at one end of the spectrum saying, do 1200 calories, don't eat carbs, don't do all this shit. They're basically just complete fuckwits. Don't really know what they're doing, but hey, they found something that works for them. So then they preach it to the rest of the world and they say, this is what it must be. This is how the world must be and how people must lose weight and feel good because it worked for me. And survivorship bias is just a really fun thing that people should look at. And you've got people up the other end of the spectrum saying, oh, I don't do stuff for weight loss. Like you should just be nurturing your body. You should just be doing like eating and doing whatever you want, but be mindful about it. both of those don't help people that are trying to lose weight and become healthier, because it's, oh, I don't do this for weight loss. It's like, well, I want to lose weight. I want to lose 30 kilos so that I can not have knee pain, so I can go to the gym, so I can fit in an airplane seat, not need the extender. I want to just go to a shop and try on what they have without needing to wonder or worry if they've got my size in stock. I don't want to have to shop at this and that. And it's like, oh yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, I don't do weight loss intentionally. I just think it's, I think it sets a bad precedence for body image. It's like, well, I already fucking hate myself. Just help me. Just help me do something, please. It's like, no, because of this. So I feel like that 100% toxic positivity is just ruining people as much as the 1200 calorie diets people. Probably not as much, to be honest. The 1200 calorie people are fucking horrendous, let's be honest. And we need to look at, what are we getting from any particular situation? If you're looking at all of the food, for example, what are you getting from that situation? What are you trying to avoid? Was the biggest question that helped me unlock a lot of the, what am I doing with all of the coping mechanisms I have? What am I trying to avoid? And it was something that knocked me off my feet, because I used to be that person that every time I would finish work, I would have a drink. And then it was, what am I trying to avoid? I can't remember where I picked it up from, but having that, it was learning the byproduct of having that drink was to de-stress, relax, and do all these things. And then one time I just went, yeah, fuck no, I don't want to be doing this forever. I don't want to have a drink to relax. Then I started looking into, can alcohol affect sleep? And yes, it can. It gets you to sleep quicker, but you don't enter the deep REM cycles, which means that you are more jittery and you don't feel as rested when you wake up in the morning. Despite the fact you get to sleep quicker, it gives you that false sense of security of, hey, I got to sleep quicker, so I must have had a good sleep. Why am I waking up so tired? Because the alcohol is fucking you up, that's why. And I didn't want to have to keep doing that. So I just went, nah, fuck it, I'm just not going to do it. And every so often, I went from like every single day down to 3 days a week, because sometimes it would win. But then over the course of a month, it was completely gone. And I still learned to rest and relax and get it from somewhere else and say, oh, you know, when I actually just sit down and watch something and just zone out, I get that same detachment from the world because I'm focused on something else. That's weird. And I didn't need the alcohol to do that. For people, when they're looking at, I just love food so much, I just can't give it up. Well, you can. But where else can you get dopamine from? Because you have a small little thing, or you have a piece of garlic pizza, or you have one little bite of something and you go, oh, fuck, we're in trouble here. All right, maybe just a little bit more. And then you keep going, you keep going, you keep going. And there's two ends of the spectrum here, or there's two sort of answers that I usually do. The first one is just don't. It depends on where people are, and sometimes that works for them. It works for me, where I'm like, Jesus Christ, just what am I doing here? And I almost get a little angry at myself, where I go, for fuck's sake, am I really letting this rule my day, like rule my life and occupy everything that's in my brain? Jesus Christ. And so sometimes I go cold turkey with whatever it is, and it works. The other times are where I go, okay, well, what am I trying to get here? What am I trying to avoid? Why am I using this thing? Why do I feel like I need it? When I ask all of those questions to myself, then I get a really clear answer of, okay, I need to add more food in at 2 o'clock, because that's when I get super hungry. That's when I feel like my lunch just wasn't enough, but it was enough to take the stomach grumbles out of it. But now 2, 3 o'clock, I'm still hungry. What do I do? Well, I could have the fiber one bar, the 90 calorie thing, but I eat that too quickly and then it doesn't feel like enough. Okay, well, I can add something else into it. And I keep looking at all of these different things that I can continue to add in, but then I just go, fuck it, why don't I just have another lunch and figure out how to do that? So then I have breakfast, lunch, lunch, dinner. The exact same as when you went to school. You would have play lunch and then you would have actual lunch. But instead of having play lunch at like 11, I have my actual lunch at 12 and then a bigger lunch at like 3:30, which then gets me through to dinner at about 6:30, 7. So there's about 3 to 4 hours between my feeding windows. And my body got used to that. And then over time, now it's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Then if I can't wait till dinner, then hey, I have a peanut butter toast. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Or just a sandwich or something like that. Just gets me through and I'm okay with that. Or if protein bars are half price, I'm not gonna lie, I buy protein bars because hey, they're half price and they're $2 something. And they're fucking amazing to be able to just get me through the day. But I schedule them in, I put them in and I say, yep, this is what I'm doing. But I can only do that because I've made aware the reason that I'm actually doing that in the first place. I'm no longer abusing food and then just saying, well, I love it. So that justifies me making myself feel like shit just because I love food and I just can't give it up. Like, we're not asking you to give it up. We're asking you to manage your self-respect, to manage your discipline, to manage your, you know, motivation comes and goes. It's not even a real fucking thing. But because, and just on that real quick, motivation is not real because it is subjective to the person. It is, you could feel like the world is going 100% your way, but nothing's actually changed, but you feel motivated. So that's awesome. So how do you create motivation? Well, you try things that are more fun, that are more passionate. You find things that you can put your soul into. You find things that just make life fun. And when things are going your way, or you feel like things are going your way, you feel more motivated. But even if nothing changes and everything is still going perfectly, a week from now, you might just wake up and go, fuck that. Just can't be bothered with it. And things will just change. Motivation comes and goes like the fucking tide. So we don't rely on it to get started, because you have to take action in order to create motivation, which is just momentum. If you want to create positive momentum, you have to do something positive that creates positive momentum, which will then get you motivated or create momentum in the direction you want to go. If you've been doing shit your entire life, or you feel like a failure, and you follow that up by doing things that compound you feeling like a failure, you're going to create negative momentum. So you're going to be heading backwards, and then you're not going to feel motivated for anything because you have negative momentum. So then you have to do something positive to go the opposite direction. I hope that makes sense in some way. In terms of the food that we're looking for, we want to figure out and bring awareness to, why are we actually doing what we're doing? What are we getting? What are we trying to avoid? And what is the byproduct of that food? Whenever I have a client that says, I have a social situation coming up, I haven't seen my friends from uni in 3 years, for example. I have this massive thing coming up and I really want to go. I don't want to restrict, but what should I do? I'm going to plan out, and this is on like a Monday, and I've got this next Saturday. I want to plan out what I've got. Here's the menu. Here's everything. What should I do? I'm going to fast on that day and skip breakfast. And it's becoming a fucking part-time job just to figure out. They're going to have to go full Sherlock Holmes just to figure out how to get through the night. Right, if I do a drink at 7 o'clock and then one at probably nine, no, that means the buzz will wear off. If I have all of my drinks at like 9, 9:30, 10, that means it'll get me a bit of a buzz, but then I will just have to ignore food for this time. And they're coming up with the world's most elaborate plan that takes all the fun out of the reason they were going there in the first place, which is to catch up with people and have fun. And then because there's so much mental gymnastics going on for that social event, when they have one drink, they go, oh, fuck that. I cannot be bothered doing it. And then it just blows out. What I tell people when they're going to a social event, if they want to be mindful with the food, because if I said be mindful with the food, what does that mean? It's, again, very subjective to the person. I know what it means for me, but for someone else, it might mean, okay, be mindful. I am ordering these things, and it doesn't change anything with their decisions. Who knows? Being mindful is, what do you want to do? And how would you like to feel now and in the morning? It's answering questions and figuring out what you would like in this moment, from life, from all of these different things. Everything that we are going to be doing in coaching is going to be, why do you want to do it? What's the goal that you would like to achieve? Where have you typically struggled? Where do you feel like you excel? It's asking a shitload of questions to get heaps of context to then say, okay, let's do this. Which is why a lot of those templated programs and things don't really work. They're awesome for short-term motivation because, again, you're taking a positive step in the right direction. It creates momentum. But eventually when you get bored of it, or the momentum starts to wear off, you go, why the fuck am I even doing this? And it creates that mindset of, it's hopeless, it's pointless, why am I even doing this? Because you didn't answer that question before you got started with something. It was, I want to lose weight. And then you jumped into it and went, man, is losing weight really worth feeling like this? I feel like shit. I've lost 3 kilos, but oh my God, I hate my life right now. And that's just not motivating. Every single person who comes to me and they say, I just want to lose weight. Now, these days, it's not just about losing weight. I know there's something under the surface because of who I am, what I do, and all the shit I do on social media. I know it's not just weight loss, because there's a lot more affordable, cheaper people out there that can just do weight loss. We need to figure out what that root cause is, or why we're doing what we're doing. It's like, okay, I want to lose weight because X, Y, Z, there's all of these deep-seated reasons for why we're doing it. That's going to be a lot more motivating than I want to be 90 kilos. Cool. You get to 92 kilos. Does that still count as 90 because it starts with a 9? Or do you have to be 89.9 to be under 90 kilos? Or do you have to be exactly 90.0 to make sure that you've hit your goal? But then what happens when you hit your goal? Because you've lost weight before and you've put it all back on. So what happens then? Oh, I'll worry about it then in the future. Okay. I mean, we've got a pretty repeatable pattern happening here. So why don't we just take care of it now? Nah, I don't want to face that issue. So all of this could be boiled down into, why do you want to do what you do? What are you getting from what you want to be doing? What are you trying to avoid? Basically, what is the root cause thing that we are either using as motivation, we're using as momentum, we're using to create some sort of action point that we can do and say, this is what I want to do. Just find that root cause. The social situation with people where I say, quote unquote, be mindful. The thing that I tell people to do when they're out at a social event is to not track anything, because you are going to spend way too much time thinking about and studying the menu. And you're going to lose yourself in that moment of, not even in the 8 mile cool way. You're just going to lose yourself in the moment of, I wonder how many calories this has, chuck it into my fitness pal. Okay, no, that has, but if I do this, and you're going to try and juggle fucking everything that's there, and it's eventually just going to be like, either, yay, I did it, it was amazing, cool, how was the night? Oh, fuck, yeah. Yeah, it was good. Good to see people. It was just good to catch up with people. As soon as that tone comes in for me, it's like, yeah, it was good. They don't know. They are lying to themselves. It might have been okay, but it wasn't what they wanted. Which brings me to the nutrition advice that I give when people are going out. Have what you want. Just don't eat like a fucking 4-year-old. You are simultaneously going to have to let your inner child order for you, but you have to be the adult that says, maybe don't eat crayons. Maybe instead get one main meal that you are going to love. If you can, if it has extra protein in it, fantastic. Like a parma, more than likely going to have chicken in it, which is going to have a hell of a lot of protein. Excellent. Eat the parma first. Eat the salad. If there is a salad, I don't really eat the salad, to be completely honest with you, unless they're doing something different and it's fucking awesome, then I will. But eat the parma first, sit with it for a minute, and then eat the chips. Because you've eaten such high protein shit, you're going to go, well, I feel full. I feel bloated. You might even eat the parma and go, whoa, okay, I'm feeling that was enough. And there's still chips on your plate. As opposed to if you eat the chips first and then you go, all right, now to the main meal. And you're going to challenge yourself, particularly 90s kids. You're going to challenge yourself because clean your plate, because that is the main thing of the meal that you've ordered. You'll get halfway into the parma, let's say, and go, fuck, I'm so full, but there's half of it left. I can do this. And I'm out with people, I can't exactly take it home. You feel challenged to finish the rest of the parma. Whereas if you just ate the main thing first, they've given you $97, fuck, that'd be a lot of chips. They've given you 97 cents worth of frozen chips and then just put it in a deep fryer and picked it up. Chicken parma, there's a bit more work that goes into it. There's a bit more flavor context. There's a bit more other things that are going on. But the thing with chips, again, is the dopamine hit we get from it, because it is one dopamine hit. Two, dopamine hit. Whereas for the parma, it's just going to feel like the meal itself is, yes, amazing, but we have to take time with eating it. We have to take time with consuming it. So it slows that dopamine hit down a little bit. But if you can focus on the main, whatever main that you get, just have one that you are going to love, that you're not going to regret. It's going to be a thing, and just say, yep, this is what I really wanted. And this is the thing that I have been looking forward to all week. Drinks. Do whatever you want. Have the no sugar version, have some wine, have whatever the fuck it is. But if you have something as the main meal that you truly enjoy and that you're looking forward to, without having to track it, without having to look at the calories or macros, you just go, there's protein in it and I like it, so I'm going to have it. You'll be surprised how much stress that mitigates or gets rid of by just going, I'm going to have this food and it's going to be fucking awesome. And you just focus on the mains and you be there with your friends or even just yourself. You be there in that moment to talk to people, to have fun, because you're not there for the food. The food is another thing. In Australia, it's absolutely the fucking central thing. It is definitely, hey, where do you want to go? I don't know. Where do you reckon it's got good food? Where do you reckon it's got good drinks? It is just part of our social norm that we have food and drinks no matter where we go. But that doesn't mean you have to have all of the food and all the drinks. If you can be the adult for your inner child, that is going to be amazing. It is going to unlock so much extra shit for you, and you're going to feel so good. There's a question that I often ask people is like, what are you going to do now that's going to make you feel good tomorrow? Because sometimes that means delayed gratification. You can still have what you want, everything in this moment, but if you have more, is it going to ruin the night and you wake up tomorrow and then ruin that day or make you feel shit that day? When I drink now, definitely not early days, because I don't remember most of those days, but today, current day, when I start drinking, the question, I love being at that tipsy part. I fucking hate throwing up. I absolutely abhor that with everything in my being, which is one of the reasons why I'm so fucking scared to have children, because I know they get sick so goddamn often and they're gonna make me sick and I'm gonna hate everything about it. And I'm gonna be like, God fucking damn it, little, I don't know, Jason. God damn it, little Jason, you made me sick. And it's fucking like Happy Gilmore and his caddy, just like, oh, I hate being sick. But anyway, when I drink or when I go out, I love being at that tipsy part where the point where I already don't care what people think about me. But when I have a few extra drinks, I'm like, okay, I'm going to dance and I don't care what people think about me. Even extra no thinky about what people judge me. And that's what we love. The part where I get to there and I go, tonight is amazing and I'm feeling good and I'm still in control of everything. I'm not tripping up the third step that's there, despite the fact there's only one step in reality. I get to that point of tipsy or where I'm enjoying the night and I'm loving it. And I go, if I have more, is it just going to ruin the night? Like, is it going to send me over? Is it going to tip me over to that drunk stage? Is it going to make me feel sick? Is it going to do all of these things? So then I know, okay, I can slow down my drinking. I can slow down or completely stop or switch over to waters for a bit, see how I feel. But then I know when I switch over to waters, it's going to be about 90 minutes, 2 hours, and then I'll start crashing and get super tired and go, I want to go to bed now. So depends on the situation. But that question I ask is it going to make the night better? Is it going to make this feeling even better, or is it going to make it worse? And it's just taking that quick second to go, hang on a minute, and just think about what we're doing. That is being mindful, in my opinion, of taking a second to go, hang on, even though I'm dancing on a table right now, what is the best life decision to do from here, probably, Travis? And, you know, sometimes we don't answer that question properly, or the question never even pops into our mind. But majority of the time these days, being an almost fully grown adult at nearly 30, it's rather easy to stop myself now because I've been practicing this so goddamn often. Is this going to make anything better? And if not, then I don't do it. Is it going to make it worse? Yeah. Well, then I don't do it. It is so hard. And I said this to my dad the other day, a couple of weeks ago, when we were actually having one of the deepest chats we've ever had. And I said to him, it's difficult to reconcile what I felt as a child with what I know as an adult. And I don't know where in the absolute fuck that came from in the depths of psychology that I didn't study. Maybe the philosophy that I also didn't study, but just got enamored in. And I honestly don't know how I'm me. Like, I'm taking a second here. I don't know how the fuck I am me, because I went through my year 10 and 11 reports that I just so happened to find. My mum dropped a whole bunch of shit off at my house and was like, hey, you've got a spare room now. Boom, this is yours. I'm like, oh, good. I'm probably going to dump most of this because I don't remember any of it. And I went through and I thought it was funny because when I was getting my ADHD assessment, I had to ask my mum and my dad, hey, when I was a child, how was I really? And there were all the questions like one through whatever the fuck, 106 or whatever. And it was like on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10, I can't remember, but where was I? And for all of them, it was like 0, 0, 0, 1, 0, 1, 0. It felt like a fucking binary talking to a computer. And what that meant was basically, no, there were no signs of that. You were just a normal kid that was doing all of that. And then I found my year 10 and 11 report cards, like when the teachers would write up, hey, this is how Trav's been going this semester. These are the notes and things that I would recommend. Every single class was Travis struggles to pay attention and gets distracted easily. He needs to spend more time preparing. He comes to class unorganized and is often missing things. He forgets this, this, this. All of it was basically, I have so much potential, but I just don't focus and I get distracted and I really need to put more attention into my studies and homework. And I hated homework with every sense of my being. I was like, I'm at school already for like 6-7 hours, whatever it is. Why the fuck do I need to come home and do more? Isn't it your job to teach me in the class that we have? And yeah, if I don't finish it, and I had some teachers that were awesome, that were like, I'm not going to give you homework unless you don't finish stuff in this class. As opposed to, here's everything we've done in the class, go do some more just because. No, I love those teachers that were like, I'll be fair with you. This is what we're doing today. And if you don't get it done, that's your homework. But otherwise, I'm not going to give you homework. And I was like, fuck yeah, that seems fair. I love that deal. Every single class except for PE, physical education. Physical education I was good at. And part of me, I wanted to be really good at it, but part of me knew that I couldn't be the best in it. So I stopped trying as hard, but I still loved it and was studying and did all this stuff. But I knew that I couldn't be the best at it. So I just sort of stopped trying a little bit, but I still got B's and A's in PE. Everything else was C minus, D plus, D, D minus, C plus. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Where'd that C plus come from? The second thing, so PE was my number one thing that I was like, holy shit, this is interesting. I love it. I can focus on it. I can do all the stuff. And it's just making sense to me. I don't know how. The second thing was psychology, but not the entire class. Psychology, the entire class, I didn't enjoy. I liked the idea of it, but the only subject that I was actually good in psychology was cognitive behavior. And this is mind-blowing me as to how the fuck this is actually a thing. Because I read those reports and I was like, ah, you know, psychology was okay, PE was like this. But every single report card for every class was just like, Trav sucks at focusing, basically, and gets distracted easily, except for cognitive behavior for the one subject that we did in psychology and pretty much everything for PE. And I was like, holy shit, that's pretty much what I do now. But I never connected them until like a couple weeks ago when I read the reports and I was like, wow, how is that where I am? And then also, just talking to people and going to therapy and being a Greek mythology nerd and being into fantasy and video games and doing all of that shit. Obviously, I feel like it's a rite of passage for young men is to learn about stoicism and being stoic and Marcus Aurelius and all of that shit. I feel like it's just a rite of passage for any depressed young men out there to learn about what stoicism is, and got really into that. And then that coincided into, okay, well, nothing's good or bad. Everything just is. And then that took me down the philosophy route. Then I was like, maybe I should go study philosophy. And I was like, well, it's not going to fucking do anything, is it? It's just going to make me feel good. And then it was like, maybe I should go be a counselor. Maybe I should study psychology. Maybe I should go do this and this and this. Maybe I should learn NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Maybe I should do cognitive behavioral therapy. There were so many things that I was like, I could do this. But then at the same time went, nah, I'm happy doing what I'm doing and I like life. So I'm just going to keep doing it. But then I kept studying and doing short courses and kept reading some things from people and just kept doing things. So me being me at the moment is like, how the fuck am I me doing what I'm doing, enjoying life, doing shit on TikTok? And how can I run a business through social media for someone that is dangerously underqualified on paper to do all of these things? But then when someone asks me about it, I go, oh yeah, I read this thing once and just retained this random information. If you ask me anything in my fucking nutrition book that's like 400 pages thick, I'd be like, oh, don't know. But, and then I could piece it together and go, yeah, actually, that's the answer. And then I could flick through it and go, okay, that actually made sense. I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but figuring out how it all works and piecing it all together somehow makes it easier in my brain if I can visualize what's happening. Oh my God. So anyway, that was a little side note for how the fuck am I me, because I'm going to claim this. I'm 29, 30 in like 20 days, but 29, and everyone has always said like, oh my God, you're so mature for your age. Oh my God, I thought you were way older. And you know, the beard has always helped because I've had a beard since I was like fucking 16, 17. But it's really odd to have 12, 13 years of adult experience and I'm not even 30 yet. And everyone's like, wow, you're so mature for your age. It's like, yeah, they're called mental breakdowns. I wouldn't recommend them, but fuck, they mature you real good. And the amount of stress that I've been under, yeah, that's why my hairline is slowly going backwards. It's not that bad. It's actually pretty good. But I find it weird that people are just like, you're so mature for your age. And I go, yeah, I wonder where all that came from. And it's like, oh, because I didn't have a fucking choice. Because I still had a good childhood, don't get me wrong. But the 17 to 20, 21, sorry, because 20 I was trying to not be here. 17 to 21 was definitely, I had to grow up really quickly and learn everything. Not just because like, oh, I'm moving out and I'm going to start my life's journey. It's because of being kicked out, of being homeless, of the mental episodes that I had because of the depression, because of everything that was going wrong in my life. I had to mature the fuck up real quick and I didn't really have a choice. And doing all of that feels like I didn't get to have the full go be rowdy, go do all these things, go be a child, go be completely fucking stupid with no consequences. I don't feel like I ever really got to do that. And then even in high school, I mean, I stopped hanging out with a lot of my friends because they were 17 and going out drinking and clubbing and all this stuff. And I was like, that seems so cool, but I'm not 18 yet, so I can't drink. And they were 17, but I was just like super into the rules, so I couldn't do any of that. So the massive side note for you. So doing all of that led me to being able to question a hell of a lot of things about myself and what I want, because honestly, I had no choice. But the years and years and years of questioning, what am I doing? Why am I here? What are the benefits and consequences of this? What is my risk versus reward analysis? Having to do all of that from a young age, I'm also still young, but having to do that from 17 years old and it being every single day, basically. And, you know, when I was younger, I used to go out every single weekend and they used to be my no consequences types of things, but they were never, you know, world shattering things. It was just, let's go to Mornington every weekend for a year on end. And I went to go live in Canada, which was fucking insane. And this is what I mean. Like, my young adulthood, everything about my life has been pretty good. But it's also like, oh shit, I don't feel like I had a choice in any of this. And it's just weird. This is, you know, this is stuff that I'm going with my therapist. So we'll talk about that later. But the constant questioning, the constant adulting, the constant doing all of this stuff, I'm way too adult for my inner child. There are way too many boundaries, restrictions, and guidelines and rules that are just in place. And this goes doubly for people that intellectualize their emotions, for people that don't want to feel their emotions. And they go, I have to logically know everything that is going on before this. The type A personality people, the apples in the room, they have to know everything. For those people, like myself, we have to bring more inner child to the playground, basically. We have to let that kid do what they do and make their decisions and go do that. The issue is that has the all or nothing effect. We are either go to the playground, do whatever you want, and just, you know, just completely fuck off, do whatever you want. I'm just going to sit back here and just do nothing. And it's like, hey, is that your kid slamming my kid's head into the slide and screaming victory? It's like, probably, I don't know. Anyway, seems like a fun game. And you just go back to reading your book. We need to be that parent that lets the inner child do what they do, but with some guidelines also to let them know that it's okay to go do some things and make mistakes and do all that because you'll learn from your mistakes. The issue is now we are trying to reconcile what we felt as a child versus what we know as an adult. And we know everything that is terrifying with the world, but our inner child is still trying to have fun, is still trying to push those boundaries, is still trying to eat everything that's in sight. And, you know, the extra bag of salt that comes into this is majority of the people that I work with are like me and they're a bit neurodivergent. They're a little bit splithy. They don't regulate dopamine as much, the ADHD people. So when you don't regulate dopamine as much and you have, for example, a chip and you go, oh, fuck, I'm in trouble now. It's not you love food and that's why it's happening. It's because we don't regulate dopamine as much and the food is giving us a massive dopamine hit and we haven't had one in a while and we're feeling a little bit down and tired, lethargic. So we're trying to regulate our nervous system with the food that we're getting because we're also feeling amazing when we eat it. So what are we actually trying to do here? It's not that we love food so much. It's that we're possibly chemically imbalanced and we're trying to up... What's that goddamn thing? Upwork, upscale. We're trying to increase our level of energy that we have, upregulate. I think that's the one. I don't even know. But we are trying to upregulate. We're trying to increase our energy, our alertness, our central nervous system through food because we are chemically imbalanced, because we're trying to get that dopamine, but because we feel tired and we have that thing, we go, oh, fuck, I just can't give this up. This is just amazing. But if it's every situation all the time, we have to be those parents and guardians that come in and say, hey, you know what? Maybe not. And you're going to throw a tantrum. You absolutely will, because that dopamine is not there as much. And even if you're quote unquote normal and you regulate everything perfectly balanced, you're still going to say, I enjoy this, but you know, maybe I shouldn't do this as much. And sometimes it is just mindless because you're eating the bags of chips while thinking, well, what am I going to have as a snack? And you're already halfway through a bag of chips and you go, well, fuck, I'm already halfway through. Might as well finish it because it's not going to hit that spot. And you know why it doesn't hit that spot? Because it's not the intention or the reason that you were looking for food. You wanted that food because you didn't want to feel bored anymore, because you wanted to be stimulated, because you wanted something to do, because you wanted to increase your central nervous system activity. You wanted to increase your brain activity. And that's what you were looking for from the food in that moment. So what else can you do to create that moment? I've had clients where they said, I cannot stop binging at night and I just cannot fucking do it. I cannot do this and this and this. And we said, all right, get a puzzle protector, because they're fucking awesome. Get a puzzle protector or do a puzzle or do something. And then this doesn't fucking work if there's kids around, but obviously put them to bed first if you can. But get a puzzle protector, do the puzzle, scatter it all out, and then make a like zero calorie hot chocolate, or just have something that is like, these are your treats. Don't have a full bag there. Put it into a small dish. And that is your thing that you do. When you are doing the puzzle, when you are having this little thing, you can even have the TV on in the background if you want. I'd recommend not, but if you need to have it on, then amazing. Because we're trying to get away from heaps of stimulus. Because obviously during the day, I have quite literally, let me tell you the stimulus that I have. I have the camera that I see right in front of me recording this podcast. I have the little sensor that tells me what my voice is doing in terms of the volume. I have my calendar on my right-hand side. I've got two stage lights that are right next to me. I can see the light on my podcast camera. I can see the Word document that I'm taking things from. I can see all of the words on my screen. I can see all of my minis and everything around me. I can see TikTok that is live right now with everybody that is there. Aiden, what's up? What's going on? And I can also see outside where there's a bird playing in the fucking street. And it's honestly, I've just put that together now. That's the thing that's actually fucking up the garden bed and throwing bark everywhere. So I figured that out. So that's kind of cool. But all of that stimulus is going on, not to mention it is currently 10:46 a.m. I have a client call in 15 minutes. I still have to do all of this. All of this is going through my head. And this is all stimulating because I have shit to do. At night, I have finished cooking dinner. I'm sitting on the couch. I'm eating it. I'm watching TV. There's probably things going through my head about, what am I going to do tomorrow? But we're not as stimulated. We're not under a time crunch anymore. We're like, oh, I'll go to bed sort of like 9:30 or when I feel tired. But it's not as, holy shit, I need to get this stuff done. So what do we do when we start to feel tired? Well, during the day, whenever you've felt tired, you've eaten food to try and get that sugar rush back up. And you go, yeah, fuck yeah, let's go. So at night, that binge is going to be very hard to resist, particularly because we're so stimulated during the day. We have fuck all food during the day, and a lot of people forget to have lunch and they go, I just grab something on the go and here we are. So when they get to after dinner, they're still hungry because they're underfed and now they're understimulated. So now they're trying to get more food and more stimulus, and that means more of a binge. If you can, first off, regulate your sleep, regulate your meals, do all that fun shit, but let's just say you didn't do all that. Why are you doing what you do? Well, because we know now we're underfed. But even if you didn't know that you're underfed, well, at night, I just feel like dinner wasn't enough. I just need that sweet treat. I just need that thing that helps me relax and helps me sort of put a full stop on the day that says, right, this is it. This is the day and this is how I'm going to stop. Okay, well, let's try this. Grab a puzzle or a video game or something that is going to be, okay, I can play an hour of this game, or I can do the puzzle with the small amount of treat that I have. I recommend a puzzle, but, you know, sometimes they're a pain in the ass to get up and move and do all that thing. But just have something that is a quote-unquote trigger for you to relax and de-stress and let go of the day. When I was coming home, when I wasn't working at my desk here, when we were all working somewhere else and we were at the office, driving home was that thing that we could detach from. Now that we work from home, it's very hard because I associate home with work. I associate this room with work. Even if I'm playing a video game, I've still got everything around me that says, oh yeah, fuck, I've got to do that. I've got my to-do list. I've got my post-it notes. I've got my fucking post-it notes in the background. I can see everything that's going on. I'm trying to get away from all of that stimulus. So I'm trying to remove myself from that room for when I have when I need to relax. Or I want to play games at a full screen so that I can't focus on heaps of things at once. Or if it is something, I'm trying to get rid of my calculator, get rid of my calendar. I want to try and be in that moment as best as I can to get away from heaps of stimulus. Some of it's still fine, but I also want to just have an event. I just want to have that moment where I can relax. I can have that trigger that says I am done for the day. And it used to be shutting my laptop and putting it somewhere else. But now that I'm on the main computer for all of my work that I need to do, it's one in the same. So I don't have that mental trigger anymore to detach from everything. And with how busy things have been for me, I've been doing 10, 11 hour, 12 hour days. Today, Tuesday is normally when I have a PT client, it's going to be a 13 hour day, 12 hour day, sorry. So, and then in July, boy howdy, I'm going to be doing 13 hour days on Tuesdays because of the new program. And there's going to be a bunch of shit coming up, but I need to figure out my schedule, and that's a whole personal issue I'll deal with. But what are the things that you're looking for? What are you trying to avoid? What are you trying to get? What is the intention of doing this? If you can figure out and bring awareness to why are you doing what you do, because you can't keep using those same excuses or reasons, even if they're completely justified reasons, you can't keep using them if they are destroying your life. If they're not so much destroying your life, but if they're not helping you get to where you want to go, and if you're not enjoying your life at the moment, you can't keep saying, oh, I just love food, that's why I can't stop. All right, well then don't stop. But I need to because I want to lose weight because I want to feel better. All right, well then stop. Oh, but I just can't. Like, okay, you need to figure this out. But we need to figure out, obviously if it's a client, I'm going to fucking help them. But for people listening that aren't clients, you need to figure out what is the reason that you're doing these things. It is more than likely going to be the byproduct of having all of that food, of having that situation, of wanting to disconnect, of wanting to relax, to wanting to de-stress, to doing all these things. That's what you're wanting. So how can you create a different situation or event or coping mechanism or strategy or whatever that helps you get that same thing? And the pain in the ass thing with this, I'm sorry, type A people, you are not going to know 100% if it's going to work. You have to try it for a while to see if it's going to work. Because when I started doing my first puzzle, I haven't done them in fucking ages, but when I first started doing my puzzle, I did 10 minutes of it. And I went, this is boring. I don't want to do this anymore. And I got my phone out, or I was doing my puzzle. I put one in and then be on my phone for a bit and go, fuck, all right, yeah, I was doing a puzzle. Hang on. Fucking hell. And then try to search what was going on. And then I got pissed off at myself and I went, all right, whenever I'm doing this, my phone is on charge in a different room. And went from 10 minutes up to 30, up to 45, up to 3 hours. Holy fuck, I'm late for a call. And then I had to put my phone in the same room with an alarm, but on the opposite side of the bench where I couldn't just grab it. So, why are you doing what you do? We often give surface level answers for things that we know that we're trying to hide, and they're just ugly to face, but we have to face them. If you want to improve your life, that is. If not, then, you know, just keep doing what you're doing and just coast by. But I assume if you're listening to this, you're not one of those people that just wants to coast by and just get through life. Because I'm willing to bet, if you're anything like me, you're tired of just existing. You're tired of just being that person that just is, and you want more. So how do you create more? Well, we've got to make room for it. And we make room for it by getting rid of the shit that's just blocking our way, which is, I love food. Oh, I just can't do it. And all of these surface level excuses, because they're preventing us from cleaning out the spare room. They're preventing us from cleaning out my closet. So yeah, Let's go ahead and do that. Ask the questions and figure out what you want. Yeah, I was trying to think if there's anything else that I can end on, but there's really not. You probably already heard it at the start of the podcast, because I believe that's where Tennille is putting it. We've got an end of financial year sale. If you want to work with us for the 6-month option, you can save $1,780. Literally just go through the website, send an inquiry, do everything as per normal. But if you submit an inquiry in June, you will be eligible to save $1,780 on the 6-month transformation. I believe $980 on the 3-month. You can save $150 a month for the entire lifetime of your membership. $150 per month on standard and $200 per month on VIP for Laura's Your Mindful Movement. And that also goes for Tennille's nutrition coaching as well, because Tennille is coming out from behind the curtain and she is getting back into some nutrition consulting. She is registered dietitian, but she is not. She is the person that I trust the most when it comes to nutrition advice for literally anyone. How do the medications work with this? They're having this type of food. How does that interact with this? She is honestly a fucking wizard when it comes to nutrition and everything about it. And if you can work with her for $199 a month, and that's forever if you sign up during June, it is an absolute steal. It is like $50 a week. It's less than $50 a week to work with a nutritionist. It's fucking crazy. And Laura, for $299 a month for standard, which is like $70 a week, I think, the feedback, the testimonials, everything that we are getting from Your Mindful Movement is ridiculous. And we know that we are onto something special with this and with Laura's ability to be able to get to the root cause of what's going on. It is insane. And we just want to get as many people into Your Mindful Movement as possible so that they can help spread the word of how fucking awesome it is. It's $299 a month for the standard and VIP, which means that you get a 30-minute call one-on-one with Laura every single week, has gone from $6.99 to $4.99 per month. And that is, again, both of them for the lifetime of your membership. I have Simply Happy Healthy coming out mid-late July, and I'm going to do a massive sale for that. But it's probably going to be very similar pricing to Your Mindful Movement, probably somewhere in the middle, not going to lie. And I'm at the moment only going to run one intake because I really want to make sure that it is perfected to the best. It lives up to my standards, basically. And I'm going to run one intake at a very low cost. I'm actually kind of scared of how much savings it's going to be. But we're not talking about that for end of financial year. That's late July. I think when I come back on the 15th of July, I think I have 3 spots available for transformation programming, and that is on July 15th. I'm otherwise booked out until then. So if you want to work with me for transformation program and you want to save some money, get in touch now, save heaps of money, and we can start July 15th. I think there's only 3 spots available. There might be 2. I'll double check. Not that I can let you know straight away, but Laura has some spots available because she has people graduating every month, June, July, and August. So there are spots opening up for her. And she is, on paper, a better coach than me. And she has a bachelor's in psychology, master's in psychology, actually. And everything that she does with all of her movement and your mindfulness, like, it's fucking insane. So go work with Laura. It's going to be amazing. Send an inquiry through and we will get in touch with you and figure out, ask some questions first off and figure out, unless you say, I absolutely 100% want to work with Laura or Travis, we will ask some questions and say, okay, cool. Sounds like Laura or Travis will make the suggestion for you to say, either one of us is going to be best for you. We'd recommend going with that person. We always want what's best for you. So yeah, if you liked that. Thanks, Kirk. If you liked the episode, give us a like, give us a love, give us a share, a comment, all that fun stuff. Quite literally, if you take 2 seconds out of your time to leave a like, comment, anything on any social media post of ours or any content creator that you enjoy, that is going to be better than giving them a $5 note. I can guarantee you that, because there are going to be more people that will see it. The algorithm will take off no matter what social platform that you're on. But any sort of engagement from you will help out that creator amazingly. And it's going to be the best thing that you can do with your time to help support people, particularly during the times of basically economic crashes. So if you want to help some small businesses and people out there, or even people, not even the fucking business, if you just want to help people be like, hey, this is a message you should hear about, engage with the post. And I've started doing that a hell of a lot more recently just because I want to support people. So costs you nothing. No one's going to fucking judge you for liking it, because it'd take a lot of work to be able to figure that out. So it does nothing but spread good news for shit that you like. So yeah, have the best time in the world. Figure out what your root cause is and why you're doing what you're doing. And that will open up a lot for you to be able to move forward with it. See you in the next one.